Welcome to the Marriage Steps podcast, where developing a long-lasting, happy relationship is the status symbol to achieve, and following my six marriage steps is a path to help get you there. I'm your host, Dr. Wyatt Fisher, a licensed psychologist specializing in marriage counseling. The Marriage Steps podcast is listener-supported, so to help keep it on the air so couples worldwide can receive hope for their marriage, please consider becoming a monthly supporter by going to patreon.com/marriage steps. Also, be sure to call my new number, 720-307-7347, and leave your marriage question in the voicemail, and then I'll respond to it on the next Marriage Steps podcast. Okay, so today we have a special episode today. We're interviewing Jen Bricker-Bauer and her husband, Dominic Bauer. And they're going to share with us a little bit about their relationship and some tips for all the newlyweds out there on how to start off right with a relationship. Jen is an author, aerialist, and speaker, and her website is www.jenbricker.com, and that's JenBricker.com. And her book, she's an author, her book is called Everything is Possible. So welcome, Jen and Dominic. Nice to have you guys on the Marriage Steps podcast today.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hello. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
So if you wouldn't mind, we were just talking about this a few minutes ago before I started recording, just to share a little bit about how you guys met, where you met, and just the history of your relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Jen, as you said already, Jen is a speaker and author and aerialist, and she was touring in Austria, actually, 2 years ago, where I grew up, where I was born. And she had an event there, a speaking event. And I just saw a little flyer. My sister's boyfriend sent me a flyer, said, Jen Bricker, born without legs, put up for adoption, is speaking at an event. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. Haven't heard of her before or anything. Just I went there to this event, heard her speak, heard her story. And that just blew me away totally. And she also was selling her book there. So I went there to the stage. She signed my book. And I went home. So that was our first meeting. Just about, we talked maybe 40 seconds, not even a minute.
Yeah.
I went home and I read the book. And while I was reading it over the course of maybe 2 weeks or something, I thought, if this is true, what is standing in that book, everything that is written here, if this is true, then I want to be with somebody like that.
Wow.
And that's how everything started. So I reached out to her on Facebook, actually. Because I didn't have anything, no email, no phone number. I didn't even know anybody that knew her. So that was the only way to reach out. And she actually answered. And then it was just texting back and forth and turned to phone calls, turned to video chats. And 2 months later, I decided to fly to LA and meet her again.
Never having been to the U.S., by the way. He had never been to the U.S.
So he started falling in love with you by reading your book.
Yeah, pretty
basically,
much.
Yes.
And he read it in German, which I find, I don't know, I just think that's so. So my book's in 11 languages, one of them being German. German is his first language. And so he bought it in German. When I was doing the book tour, well, the speaking book tour, I wouldn't say a book tour, it was kind of a speaking and book tour in Austria. I was selling mainly German books, like maybe one English book per event I would have there just in case, because there's kind of always somebody that just wants English. Anyway, he bought it in German. And I just find that interesting, like, that he was reading about me in a language I don't speak, in his first native language. Like, it's just totally, like, representative of my whole life. Pretty much.
Unique. Like, one of a kind.
Very much, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, my wife is from Germany.
Oh,
yeah. Cool. So, her mother is German, and so all of her mom's family is in Germany. And so, my wife was raised going to Germany every summer for, like, 3 months. And so I've been with her a lot to Germany, and I studied German in college myself. So it's like I'm not fluent. I thought I was until I went there.
I actually picked up a lot of German just by hearing it 24/7 over and over every day, inundated, you know? So I could survive, you know, like I could order food. I could order a whole pizza, like with the toppings. So I could, like, do the essentials, like ordering food, surviving kind of thing, which is important.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you mind just sharing just maybe a minute or two? I mean, that's probably too short, but whatever you feel comfortable sharing with your history and why you've been touring and what that's all about.
Yeah, so exactly. I was born without legs and put up for adoption right basically from the hospital, left in the hospital, then went into a foster home for 3 months, then was adopted, and by the perfect family. Not the perfect family, but the perfect family for me. And, you know, it was just totally 100% where I was supposed to be, family I was supposed to be with. And the way they raised me was really, now that you look at it, you will say, oh, that's exceptional, that's unbelievable, that's amazing. And it was, but I think the way people kind of fantasize about it or make it kind of what it wasn't is that they kind of imagine my parents to be these like scholarly, studied, amazing people, you know, who somehow studied people with no legs or adoption or something, and it could not be further from the truth. They were like salt of the earth, country, you know, small town folks, and they had the right heart. You know what I mean? Like, they had the right inside to raise me. So they raised me not as their adopted daughter, not as their daughter with no legs, but as Jen, you know, just period. You have a you know, you were born this way for a reason. God didn't make a mistake. This is what, and that sounds so cliche and so like, yeah, we've heard that 100 times. That's cute that you tell that to a kid. So that's a good coping mechanism and all this stuff. But it's different entirely when the person who's saying it or the people who are saying it mean it. And you see it backed up every single day of your life.
Sure.
For example, meaning like I go to them and say, oh, I want to play softball, basketball, volleyball, even power tumbling. Power tumbling is like gymnastics. You know, it's you're flipping, you're twisting, you're doing all this and competitively. Any of those one things they could have said if their words weren't true, right? They could have said, well, I don't know. I mean, you don't have legs. How would you do that? Isn't that dangerous? I don't know. I've never done this. No one's ever done this. You know, all of these things, right? Which for a child would have been extremely discouraging. You know, and I just would have, I don't know, I probably wouldn't have tried or gave up, or I don't know, I was pretty stubborn. Maybe I still would have tried. I don't know. But that was just one example. So they would say, all right, well, if you want to do it, then, you know, you can put your mind to it and you'll figure it out. Yeah, you might have to do some things differently, but if you want to do it bad enough, then you'll find a way to do it. And that was always this, like, it was just, that's what it was. Black and white, simple. And so they were always encouraging. They always allowed me to just kind of do what I wanted to do or try what I, you know, try things. You know, even roller skating. Like, what?
Wow.
Yeah, like, you're like, okay, now she's lost it or whatever. But yeah. No, I mean, just put the roller skates on my hands and they were like, all right, knock yourself out, you know, have fun.
So how did being born without any legs impact your feelings around getting married one day, if at all?
You know, it's, I never know how to answer these questions because I think I'm going to sound like pompous or something. I don't know. But truthfully, the truthful answer is that, you know, I just explained the way I was raised, right? So that kind of environment where a person with no legs could believe that she could be a tumbler.
Sure.
And not, like, just think about that for a minute. I didn't see anything, any reason why it would be exceptional for me to want to be a tumbler when no one ever had done it in ever, anywhere, with no legs. So that shows you the kind of environment, right? So
yeah.
My parents told me that I was born that way for a reason, right? I said that. And then they meant it and they backed it up every day of their lives, which is extremely powerful. So I felt cute. I loved being small. I was like always so chatty, always such a social butterfly, involved in everything. And so finding dates or things like that was like the opposite of a problem. So I never, I mean...
Right. It was never an obstacle. It was always like,
no.
I can do it all. Like, sky's the limit.
Here's the thing. Whether you have legs, don't have legs, or I don't know, think you're attractive on the outside, don't think you're attractive on the outside. It's whatever you're like, if I had a problem or a big insecurity with not having legs, I can guarantee you that would be very different from what I just said. Then I probably would have a big problem.
Yeah.
Maybe finding people who would want to date me because they would feel uncomfortable if I felt uncomfortable. And that's true for anybody, though. That's just true for anyone. So
Yeah. You
can be very physically attractive and totally insecure or have all these things going on inside, and you're just not going to attract the same amount of people. It's just different. So
yeah.
I think that's why. I think just because I was always so at peace and just kind of like, I don't know. I like the way I am, actually. It's not a big deal. I think that is why it was never an issue finding somebody to be. People were always wanting to date me, always flirting with me, always that, you know. And for me, that was normal. I didn't know that that was even anything. Like, the first time someone asked me that, I looked at them like they had four heads. Like, do you know? Like, have you met my personality? Like, you know? Yeah.
There's a phrase in psychology that says, we're the products and the producers of our social environment. And that relates to what you're talking about, where we're the products, like the messages we receive growing up. That's how it's producing us. That's why we're the products. But then how we believe about ourselves makes us act certain ways, which then influences how people interact with us. So we're the products and the producers. So it's kind of, it's interesting hearing you describe that, because it really fits that phrase really well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so totally.
How long have you guys been married now?
For about a year. A little longer than a year. We got married in July 2019.
Okay.
Okay, not a year and a half.
So here's my first question for you. So, well, actually, we've already gone through the first one. So how long have you been together? The second question is, what were some of your major concerns about getting married?
I think, so this is interesting. It's a total like role reversal. So Dominic never even thought, maybe, he's like, maybe I'll get married one day. And if I do, it's not until like 30, 35. And he's younger than me. And I'm over here like preparing to be married for like the last couple years. I would say seriously. And when I say preparing, I mean like myself internally to try to like, look at areas of myself that maybe would be need to be stronger to be a wife one day or things like that. So I had been on that track. I just felt like God was leading me kind of like, I just knew I was going to get married. Like I knew I was leading up to that point. I don't know how else to explain it other than I just knew. Okay. And so about 2 years prior to meeting him, I was kind of already on that path of like getting my ducks in a row or getting myself together just kind of as a whole person. And then he was the complete opposite. And yet, he was the first one very, very, very soon and was like, I know I'm supposed to marry you. And I was like, it took me a little longer. What about
you? Yeah. So what about you, Dominic? What were some of your main concerns?
Well, like Jen said, I grew up in a totally different environment than her. Because I can say the culture where I grew up, it's not the traditional culture that you see here in the U.S. For example, just the whole dating thing. I dated when I was, I don't know, 14 years old. And for my parents, that was totally normal. For 14, 15 years old and girlfriend sleeping over at my house or something like that was totally normal. Nobody would even say something. So that was that kind of thing where I grew up. And I always struggled in an area. And that's why I thought, or struggled in terms of keeping a long-term relationship. I couldn't do that. So I was always dating, not dating, dating, but couldn't keep a relationship. And then at the same time when I met Jen, I also basically met God and he showed me all these things that are important for a relationship. And so first when Jen, we were chatting for about 2 months and then as we mentioned, I flew to LA, we had spent about 5 days together, and then Chen tells me, you know, I will not have sex before marriage. And I said, well, that's good for you, but nothing for me. Because honestly, at that time, I thought, that's totally stupid, and why would I go in a relationship? I mean, I can also have a friend, right? Why would I even have a girlfriend when I don't have sex with her? So that was a concern that I had when I met her.
Sure.
And we didn't talk for about 2 days.
Because
of that, yes.
Because I was thinking, okay, if you don't respect that, bye. Like,
sure,
okay.
Sure.
You know?
And then I thought about it and I reflected and I was like, oh my goodness. This was like a thing falling off my eyes. And I thought, that's why this didn't work, this didn't work, that didn't work, this relationship. And I thought, yeah, now it all makes sense.
Hey, wow.
And so when we started dating without having sex, that's when I thought, wow. Because if you, like I experienced it and always was for the last 15 years before I met her, or 10 years before I met her, you just wear your pink glasses and you think everything's fine, although you don't even know that person. So if people say, you don't even know what you buy into if you don't have sex before marriage, I think it's the other way around. If you blind yourself with this all this emotion, because sex is meant to for people to bond and for people to have a strong connection emotionally also, yeah, you don't even know that person. Because you're so blinded and overwhelmed by all these feelings and butterflies and all the things, yeah, to not even see clearly in what you get into. And that was removed there. And we really had the time to get to know each other, to have a lot of conversations and being clear in mind. And that was, I think, at first, like you said, the most hesitant thing or the most biggest obstacle that I'm concerned that I thought I would have, and then turn into the greatest thing.
Wow. Okay, that's an interesting story for you guys with your courtship. Thank you for sharing all that. The next question here is, what was some of the best advice you were given about marriage from other people?
Man, I feel like I've been given a lot of good advice. The thing, I think, let's see. Thing is, all the advice that I got before I was married, the thing I realized the most was that it was all great advice, and I literally did everything I could, you know, to like get in all that advice. But then it only goes so far, and then you have to just be married and you have to just experience. Like, there doesn't matter, because I am like the perfect example of that. And I mean, one of the best things that I think we already were kind of on the same page, but we had premarital counseling for three months every week before we got married, which was the best decision ever. But one of the things I think that we stuck with and that we are really, we're just, thank God, naturally on the same page with, was kind of protecting our marriage in the way of who we get advice from, who we listen to, and who we talk about our marriage to, which is literally our pastor and his wife. That's it. I don't talk to my girlfriends about things that drive me nuts about him, vice versa. And this is like, man, that was the best. This was just really good advice. I could say so much more, but that is so practical. And I understand why that's important. Sure. It makes total sense to me.
So kind of just being careful with who you share your marital issues with.
And who you ask advice. Like,
right, who you get the advice from.
Why would you ask advice from somebody who you know lives completely different than you do?
Sure.
Like, doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Like, it's just maybe not wise, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. What about you, Dominic? What was some of the advice you got on how to have a good marriage?
Well, the best advice I got, it was probably from my wife. and that is
say yes, dear.
You cannot, advice that I would give now, being married over a year, is you cannot talk enough. You cannot talk about, especially when you, me coming from a total different country, total different culture, and you know that you have some things, you talk about the same subject, you think you talk about the same word, but actually you talk about two different things.
Yeah.
And it's so you cannot communicate enough. And so especially when there are problems, just talking it through, figuring out why I believe what I believe, figuring out why she thinks how she thinks. And so that's probably the greatest thing that we have done, is talking over and over and over again. And it doesn't matter how frustrated you get or how frustrated the other person gets. Doesn't matter. Just keep on talking, figuring it out, and just moving forward.
Yeah. That's such a good tip with talking. And it seems like a lot of couples, when they start out, they do a lot of talking. And then the longer they're together, the talking starts to evaporate more and more, and then that becomes a problem, obviously. And so I appreciate you saying that, because that's just to underscore how important that it always is, no matter how long you've been together, is to continue to talk.
Yeah.
And how you talk and what you talk about and being open.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole can of worms.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. And then let's see, my next question, what are some of the keys, you spoke to this a little bit, to starting marriage off right? Like, if you were to speak to another newlywed, you know, what would you say? Okay, here's the top things you guys need to make sure you do to start marriage off right. What would that be?
Well, I always suggest premarital counseling. I've had many people in my life be like, man, I wish we would have done premarital counseling. You know, I wish we would have done that before. So I always suggest that. And then, yeah, communicate, like he said, communication. So those are like two huge pillars. And I think that one of the biggest things for me, and also the most challenging for me, is actually, we've all heard it 100 times. And my pastor told me this even before we got married, like, Jen, Dominic is not and will never be a perfect person. And there will never be a guy who is perfect. Every human is flawed. And you're like, yeah, I know that. Like, no one's perfect. I know, I get it. We've heard it. Like, I get it. And he's like, I really want you to, like, think about what I just said and really understand that. And if you can accept that, then, like, you're good, you know? And that is really hard for me to accept. And I have always been, which then turns into being judgmental. Very hard for me. Like, because I've held myself to such an extremely high standard my whole life. Push, 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 push. Judge myself. Why aren't you better? Why aren't you do this? All that kind of thing. And so it's hard for me, was or is, or combination of both, to accept a person as a whole with that means that they're not always going to be what you want them to be. They're not always going to be perfect. They're not always going to be up to these standards. You know what I mean? And neither myself. But I think that is something that, like, if we could talk about somehow and, like, push to people somehow of, like, yeah, we know we've heard it, but kind of like my pastor said, but let it sink in. Like, do you really understand what that means? Do you really, like, are you really going to accept somebody as a whole? Because you really cannot survive through a marriage without accepting somebody as a whole. Like, it just doesn't work.
Right. And that gets into the whole question mark of how much should we expect our partner to change or not to change for preferences we would love. And what I always tell people is mild to moderate change is reasonable, but massive change is never going to happen, because you may be able to make an introverted partner more sociable, but you're never going to turn them into an extrovert, you know, something like that. So kind of mild to moderate change is usually the goal. But yeah, that's huge, right? That's huge as far as, are we willing to accept the weaknesses both in ourselves and in our partner? Because you got two imperfect people coming together to live happily ever after.
Right.
Said and done. What about you, Dominic?
Well, I was thinking about what we were talking about a lot with our pastor in premarital counseling was, do we really have the same picture about what marriage means and what standard we want our marriage to be on? If we think, well, I've heard friends of mine from Austria being together for 5-6 years, I don't know if I get married. If I look at my work colleagues, you know, the divorce rate is like 70% in my company right now. I don't know if we should get married or not. I've heard that before. And so you have to be very clear with your partner and stand on the same for foundations. When Jen and me was saying, we said we would never use the word divorce. We would never even speak it out. That's not an option, period. And that's what we hold ourselves up to this. That's just not happening. Yeah. And so that can be such a tremendous blessing for your whole life. It's no matter what troubles or obstacles coming our way, we just move on and face them and move on and face them and move on. And so then marriage is such a blessing, because you, for all the areas in your life, if you look at it that way, it's divine. It's the most beautiful thing that we have. And it's such a beautiful bond that just cannot be broken, period. And that just strengthens us so much in all the areas. It's incredible.
That's great. Yeah, that reminds me of the two main approaches of marriage is the covenant approach versus the contract. And the contract says, I'm committed to you as long as my needs are met, as long as I'm in love. And the moment those things aren't happening, divorce is a viable option. That's the contract. And then the covenant is, I'm committed to you, you know, long term, even though we're going to go through highs and lows, different seasons, even when I may not be in love with you at times, even when my needs aren't being met at times, I'm still in it for the long haul. And so the covenant approach has a lot of advantages. And one of them is what you're speaking to, it sounds like, Dominic, where it creates this tremendous amount of security, where like if you both know, like we're in this for the long term, it allows people to become more vulnerable. And then more vulnerability leads to more emotional and physical intimacy. So it has the other advantage to the covenant approach that I've noticed is it allows you to have opportunity to become a better person. Because through long-term relationships is when you get ongoing feedback of your growth areas and how you could be better, blind spots. And people who jump from relationship to relationship miss out on that feedback and that growth mm-hmm. opportunity. They just bring their baggage right with them to the next marriage. But if you stay in the same relationship and you're open to that feedback from your partner, that's where iron sharpens iron, right? And that's where you really grow and become a better person, which makes you a better partner.
That's awesome. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's see. What about some potholes? So for couples starting relationships, starting marriages, what are some potholes that you would encourage them to watch out for? Like some traps or bad habits that can creep in there early on?
Yeah, I think bad habits, even for the most expressive like me, I'm very good in communication and pretty good at being just kind of not blunt, but just kind of outspoken, I guess, in a way of communicating needs or dislikes or whatever. Like that's kind of just, I don't know, easier for me. And I don't mind hearing that as much. Like, in a way, like I like having these conversations. Even that being said, there's so much that I still wasn't discussing or was just not verbalizing or was holding in, or it's so weird how those things happen. And it's an easy trap, like that you don't even realize that you're, even when I would be expressing some, not all, or, and then you just build up and then you let it, then you're like a fighter, you know?
Yeah.
So I think if you can, if a person can push themselves from the very beginning and set, that we did, we really have tried, I have to say, to set good habits from the beginning. So it's more work, it's more frustrating, it's definitely harder in the beginning, but I know the payoff, like if you set good habits, we all know that. If you set good habits from when someone's a kid or from the very beginning of something, it's only gonna make the long run better. We know that. So we really have been trying to just simply establishing the fact that you want to set good habits from the beginning, I think is really good.
Sure.
Just, you know, committing to that.
Yeah.
Just boom, right there, you know?
Okay, good. What about you, Dominic?
Yeah, I think it's the thing that you mentioned before. Even we are not married that long, just a little over a year. But sometimes I or we catch ourselves with being frustrated and not saying anything when it's like you don't want to be nagging or something, you don't want to point out all the mistakes in your partner. But if it's really you thought about it and it's not just something emotional that you just wanted to express, but it's something thought out and you just don't say anything, I think that's a mistake. And it's also always depending on how you say it, but holding it in is never a good thing to do. And you maybe wait on a situation where there's a good moment where you can really talk and peacefully have a conversation about some basic issues, and you should never stop communicating. That's what you mentioned before, and that's I think what we really have to be actively working on continuing. And you, even after 1 year, you know, you say something for five times and then you think I'm over it, I'm not saying it again. But you cannot give up. I mean, that's the thing that you agreed on in the first place, right? You made promises at your wedding, that, and that's what you want to go for. And so you cannot just give up.
Yeah.
Even if it's in the small, you know, it's even if it's very little.
Sure, sure. And I appreciate you guys highlighting that, because it's interesting to think of the evolution of a relationship where it starts out where everyone's so happy and you're meeting each other's needs perfectly and everything's rainbows and butterflies. And then you're together for a little while, and then little things start creeping in, little agitations or frustrations or needs aren't quite met the same way they were. So that would be called fall, right? You're kind of, when a couple slowly goes into fall, and then right there, what do you do, right? Do you stuff it? Do you kind of keep it to yourself? And that's where I think a lot of couples start that bad habit, because they don't want to hurt their partner's feelings, or they don't want to cause a fight, or they think maybe they're overreacting to something they're feeling, so they dismiss it. But then it kind of plants a seed, and then it kind of grows, and then pretty soon you start kind of detaching a little bit, or it can build up and some people blow up. So what you're both highlighting, it sounds like, is just that importance of regularly checking in with yourself. Like, is anything building up that I haven't been sharing? And then intentionally, you know, opening up and dialoguing about it. And then it's tricky on the other side to make sure you're receptive when you get that kind of feedback, because a lot of people get threatened, and or they feel attacked, or they, you know, they get defeated. And so then that will influence how much your partner wants to share in the future. Right?
Exactly.
Because then you may learn, like, oh my gosh, last time I brought that up, they freaked out, or, you know, they got really defensive. So now I really don't want to bring stuff up. And then there's the slow drift starts to creep in right there.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I encourage couples to do is this exercise called love buckets. And it's basically finding out the top three things both partners need to feel loved and satisfied. And I call those fillers. And then the top three things your partner does that makes you feel negative towards them. And that's called the drainers. Mm-hmm. And so I have couples create this list of their partner. You both make your own list, and then you give it to your partner. So every week you can look at, here's the top three things my partner needs to feel loved and satisfied. And here's the top three things that I do that they don't like that drains their love bucket. And then once a week they talk about that list and they say, hey, how am I doing on your three fillers and on the drainers? How could I get better? And it creates kind of this culture right from the start, from whenever a couple started, of just opening up those lines of communication and having a growth mindset to continue to improve for each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it can be really powerful personally, just because it creates a format to do exactly what you're talking about, like having that habit of keeping the lines of communication open.
That's awesome. That's really good.
So what would be kind of some concluding comments? So for couples, no matter how long they've stayed married, what would be like your pearl of wisdom you'd love to pass on to other couples?
Well, this is not like some, you know, deeply wisdom thing, because I'm not in a place, I've only been married a year, so I'm not going to try go down that road. But one thing that even long before I got married, even in my book, which came out in 2016, so it was like 4 years, you know, years before I got married. One thing I always wanted to keep, I wanted to keep myself, like my body, healthy and fit and attractive. So I went through a whole fitness journey, and that was really big for my life, like just on many reasons, like, or I mean on many levels for many reasons. So meaning like, I saw my body do things that I never thought it could do. You know, I got smaller and more fit and more like confident in my body. Even though I was always a confident person, my body, there were things that I had allowed myself to believe. Like, for example, I always had muscles and bigger muscles than I thought a female should have. So I always felt very insecure. I felt it was not feminine. And I thought I had really just kind of given in and accepted the lie that I could never look graceful or anything or elegant, because I was always so muscular and athletic. Then I now go through this transformation with my trainer years ago and people start telling me that I look elegant when I'm performing and I'm graceful and my arms are finally looking smaller and toned. And so all of that being said is that it showed me certain things were possible that I didn't believe in. And that changes something in your mind of that is applicable to your whole life. And then into that, and how it relates to marriage, is that if you are confident with how you look, if you're healthy, if you're really putting in effort into what you're putting into your body, food, water, getting sleep, really taking care of yourself inside and outside, you are going to be a better partner. Just period. You're going to be a better friend, partner, whatever. Better at your job, you know. And so for me, I always felt like, I don't know, it wasn't talked about in certain areas of life, or people just, you kind of felt like, well, it's not all about looks. No, it's not all about looks, but I think it's kind of significant. Like, if you're taking care of yourself and you're really like not just letting yourself go, your partner is going to respect that. They're going to like that in you, and hopefully they will do the same. You know what I mean? Yeah. So for me, maybe it's not what you're expecting me to say, but I have seen that just even in the year, just, you know, it's a very good thing. It's a very healthy thing. And we like, we're really aware of like the food we eat, the kind of food we eat. We put a lot of money and time into the stuff, the food we eat, supplements we have, lifestyles, trying to go to bed early. Like all of that stuff is connected. So I think if each person can take responsibility for their bodies and how they, a healthy lifestyle as a whole, I think only good things come from that.
Yeah, I think that's great. I'm a huge health fanatic myself, and so I have a real high value around health. But the thing I hear you saying that I appreciate is when you take care of your body, looking better is almost a byproduct, right? It's like you're taking care of yourself, and that makes you feel better, makes you act better, makes you function better. Mm-hmm. And then, oh yeah, by the way, and you also look better. Yeah. So it's almost like that's not really the motive, but it's like a wonderful byproduct that happens as a result of taking good care of yourself that makes you feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What about you, Dominic? What would be a pearl of wisdom?
So what actually very similar and basically the complementary thing what Jen just mentioned is when you feel good physically, it makes you, it's easier to maintain mental and psychological and spiritual health. I think it's really two things that affect each other, but both things you have to take care of, and also in responsibility to your partner to really take the responsibility and be aware of how you are, how your mental health is, how your spiritual health is. And that's what we put first every single morning, that everybody, when we get up in the morning, Jen goes, has prayer time, reading time, and I do as well. Mm-hmm. And so like, as a Christian, you say, yeah, your relationship that you have with God, but let me explain that real quick. It's basically, you know, an empty bucket cannot fill somebody else. And so what we do every morning is kind of get rid of that baggage that we have, fears, anxieties, or dreams that we want to have. We pray, we give it to God. We pray for the things that we want in our life, that we want more of, and we accept the great gift that we have received from God. And all that love that we get from him, the ability to love somebody else and unselfishly love somebody else, it's just, I cannot imagine to put up with all of that yourself. And so when we go to God first and get the love of his, the ability to forgive, the ability to really look at your partner's needs and not just at yourself, and even if you are empty, you always have something to give. And so that's the thing. If you do that or not do that and then come together, that makes a huge difference. And so it's, I think it's a responsibility also as a spouse to take care of that mental and spiritual health yourself and responsibility to your partner.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I hear you saying is it's a responsibility element of the better I take care of me, the better I'm going to be able to care for you.
Exactly.
And vice versa. The more I neglect myself physically, you know, emotionally, spiritually, the more I'm neglecting me, I'm going to be running on fumes. So how am I going to be able to meet your needs?
Yeah.
Like I'm barely meeting mine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Really, so it sounds like an ethical responsibility as partners, like taking care of me is part of my commitment in this marriage, because then I'm going to be able to better. So similar to what you said, you can't fill up a cup from an empty pitcher.
Yeah,
exactly. Right? Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for being a part of the Marriage Steps podcast. I really appreciate your time and just, you know, sharing your experiences and your wisdom. And for all the listeners, so as a reminder, you can go to Jen's website at jenbricker.com, and her book is Everything is Possible. Where's the best place for them to find that book, Jen?
Yeah, I mean, you can find it on Amazon. You can, you know, I post daily on Instagram too. So everybody, I think for the daily stuff and people just, you know, look at Instagram stories and stuff, and that's at Jen Bricker as well on Instagram. The book you can get, of course, on my website or also our Amazon, or you can do like an audio if you like. And I actually read the book for the audio, so it's me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so kind of whatever you want, whatever floats your boat.
Okay, super. Well, again, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to share with us. And I'm sure your story and your history and just your wisdom, even though you're only like a year and a half in, but you guys have already gained so much, it sounds like, I'm sure it's going to benefit a lot of the people listening. So I really appreciate you making time for this today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Take care, guys.
Thanks.
Bye. You too.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Marriage Steps podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to click the 5 stars, leave a review, and share it with your family and friends. The more reviews I receive, the higher the podcast will appear on search results so more couples can find it. So please leave a review if you haven't done so already. For more marriage resources, go to my website, drwyattfisher.com. And if this podcast has made a positive impact on your relationship, I would love to interview you, because your story can inspire countless others. So if you have benefited from this podcast, if your marriage has gotten better, if you've fallen back in love, please email me. My email is info@drwyattfisher.com. And remember, your marriage is alive. So if you care for it, it will grow. But if you deprive it and neglect it, it will wilt and die. The choice is up to you. Take care.